Welcome to Native America Calling. From Studio 49 in Albuquerque, I'm Camille LaCapa. In high school, Stephen Graham Jones was not always the ideal student. His exuberant personality caused him problems, and he had to attend an alternative school to obtain his high school diploma. Today, he's an associate professor at Texas Tech, the same school where he received his Bachelor of Arts degree in 1994. Now at the age of 33, he holds a master's degree and a PhD, and he's the author of three novels. His latest book is called Bleed Into Me, a book of short stories. Join us as we talk with Book of the Month author Stephen Graham Jones next on Native America Calling. This is the Wednesday, October 26th edition of Native America Calling. I'm Camille LaCapa. Stephen Graham Jones is a Blackfeet Indian from Montana. He has lived his entire life in Texas, and despite the distance between the Blackfeet Reservation in Browning, Montana, and the Lone Star State, he has managed to stay connected to his cultural ties. Throughout his life, his family moved from town to town. His mother was a single parent and managed to care for her children by finding odd jobs here and there. During his high school years, Stephen's family settled in Midland, Texas. He got into trouble with the law and was skipping school a lot. He passed his time hanging out at the pool halls. To this day, he believes he learned more from the people he met playing pool than from his teachers in school. Like many young people, there is always an experience that changes their perspective on life. For Stephen, it was a day he came to science class, unprepared to read his oral report. He made up the report as he went along. A girl sitting next to him informed the teacher that Stephen was faking his report and that he was wasting the class's time. The teacher did not get mad at Stephen or the girl. Instead, she said, "He may be making up the report, but just wait. In 15 years, he's going to be something." Despite his rocky start in school, Stephen was determined to prove his teacher was right. He continued his education and earned his BA from Texas Tech University and his master's degree from the University of North Texas. At the age of 28, he received his PhD from Florida State, and Stephen may be the youngest person from his tribe to obtain a doctorate. Today, Stephen Graham Jones is a writer and an associate professor at Texas Tech University in Lubbock, Texas. He is the author of The Fast Red Road, All the Beautiful Sinners, The Bird Is Gone, A Manifesto, and now his latest publication, Bleed Into Me, a book of short stories. Join our conversation today as we talk with Book of the Month author Stephen Graham Jones. Our number here is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 800-99-NATIVE. And joining us from his office in Lubbock, Texas, is Stephen Graham Jones. He is Blackfeet. Welcome to Native America Calling, Stephen.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Well, there's 17 short stories featured in your book, and one of the stories is titled Discovering America. And I'd like us to start off with that story to set the tone for today's program.
All right. I'll read it right now. Discovering America. Because I'm Indian in Tallahassee, Florida, the girl behind the counter feels compelled to pull the leather strap around her neck, show me her medicine pouch, how authentic it is. Yeah, I say, and don't tell her about this one-act play I'm writing, about this Indian in the gift shop at the bottom of Carlsbad Caverns. His name isn't Curio, but that's what the lady calls him when she sighs into line with her Germanic accent and her Carl May childhood. You should do a rain dance or something, she tells him. She's never seen heat like this, like New Mexico. In the place, she's sweating, he's sweating, and there's uncounted tons of rock above them, all this pressure. In Tallahassee, it rained all the time. I stayed there for 11 months, 19 days, and 6 hours. Because I'm Indian at a party in Little Rock, Arkansas, a group of students approaches me out of the back room of the house, ceremony still thick on their breath. In a shy voice, their leader asks me what kind of animal my spirit helper is, and when I can't quite get enough tact into my mouth to answer, they make a show of respect. Say they understand if I can't tell them, really. They tell me theirs, though. A grasshopper, a dragonfly, three wolves, and somewhere in there I become that tall, silent Indian in Thomas Pynchon's Mortality and Mercy in Vienna, right before he goes cannibalistic in the middle of an otherwise happening party. The working title of the play I'm still writing is The Time That Indian Started Killing Everybody, and staying there with my beer, I don't revise it. In Little Rock, there were all kinds of bugs I hadn't seen before. I stayed there for 5 months, 4 days, and 22 hours. Because I'm Indian in Odessa, Texas, the guy who picks me up on off the side of the road asked me what kind. He's an oil field worker. His dashboard is black with it. When I say Blackfeet, he finishes for me with Montana. Says, yeah, he drilled up there for a while. Cold as hell. Yeah, I say, think this is going to be an all right ride. He drives and tells me how when he was up there, he used to ride a helicopter to the rig every morning. It was that cold. In trade, I tell him how the National Guard had to airlift hay and supplies a couple of winters back. He nods as if this is all coming back to him. And then, with both arms draped over the wheel, real casual, asks me if they still run over Indians up there. I turn to him and he explains the sport. Even hangs a tire into the ditch to show me how it's done. In Odessa, the butane pumps go all night, and it's hard to sleep. I stayed there for 3 months, 14 days, and 14 hours. Because I'm Indian, the guys at the warehouse in Clovis, New Mexico, add a single feather to the happy face that's been carved into the back of my locker ever since I got there. It's not like looking in a mirror. Every time, it's not like looking in a mirror. My second week there, we're sweeping rat droppings into huge piles. And when I lean over one to see what Butch is pointing at, he slams his broom down, drives it all into my face. That weekend, I start coughing it all up, become sure it's the hantavirus that's been killing Indians all over. My whole check goes into the payphone, calling everyone, talking to them one last time, reading them my play, the part where Curio kills one of the gift shop people the old way, which means he hits him across the face with a log of Copenhagen and follows him down to finish it out of mercy. In Clovis, they don't turn their trucks off so you can talk on the phone, so you have to scream. I stayed there for 4 weeks, 1 day, and 2.5 hours. Because I'm Indian in Carlsbad, New Mexico, the crew I'm working with calls me chief, motions me over every time there's another animal track in the dirt. I don't know, I tell them about the tracks, even though I do. And for a couple of hours, we work in silence, up one row, down another. Once I find strange and cartoonish tracks in my row, traced with a sharp corner of a hoe, but I pretend to miss them, pretend no one's watching me miss them, all this pretending. Towards the end of the day, I pass one of the crew, and without looking up, he asks if I've scalped anybody today, Chief. I unplant a weed from his row, look up for the briefest moment, long enough to say it, nobody you know. He doesn't laugh, and neither do I, and then later that night in the gas station, I finish the play I started writing in Florida. It starts when the clerk wipes the sweat from his forehead, says how damn hot it is, and dry. I neither nod nor don't nod, just wait for him to say it. In Carlsbad, New Mexico, the law is sluggish, slow to respond. I stay there for 16 hours, 9 minutes, and 52 seconds, and when the rain comes, it's not because I danced it up, but because I brought it with me.
I had you read that story because you said that was one of your favorites in this publication. Why is that?
Oh, it's one of those stories that's probably 92% from my life. Like that guy, that oil field worker who picked me up, I mean, that's just exactly what happened. And it seems like half the offices I go into, people ask if I'm going to do a rain dance, you know. It gets kind of annoying after a while.
I think as Native people, you know, those kind of questions always come up, and especially if you're the only Native person in a room. Mm-hmm. As soon as they find out you're a Native American, and when they find out you're Blackfeet, what happens after that?
Oh, they just, I mean, all the, everything they expect from the movies, they expect from me, you know. I've had students, I guess, ask me before if my relatives lived in teepees and stuff. It's strange how people think Indians are exotic and foreign and not part of today's world, you know.
But sometimes there's nothing wrong with being exotic.
Oh, no, not at all.
Well, today we're talking with Stephen Graham Jones. He's a Blackfeet, and he is our Book of the Month author, and he has a book now out called Bleed Into Me, a Book of Short Stories. If you'd like to join our conversation, our number here is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. At what age did you become interested in writing, Stephen?
Oh, I wrote all growing up. In high school, I wrote these long, rambling things that were just, they were just letters to girlfriends to make them not hate me anymore. You know, they weren't really stories. I'd write them as stories, but, you know, I wasn't thinking about publishing them. I was just thinking about her going out with me again on Friday night or whatever. It wasn't until I was 20, I guess. No, I was 19 when I wrote my very first story ever. It was a story called The Gift, I believe. I wrote it in the emergency room of a hospital that I was in for 3 days while my uncle was, you know, living and dying back there. And I just had an empty spiral with me, nothing to read, so I wrote a story, and I gave it to some people at Texas Tech, and they were impressed enough that they wanted me to do more, so I just started doing it, and here I am, you know.
Well, in our earlier conversation, you said that what inspires you to start writing is one sentence, and that's how you begin your story.
Yeah. Yeah, I just, I have all kinds of story ideas. I have notebooks full of story ideas, but none of them work without that first sentence. You've got to have the voice down. You've got to hit the voice in that very first sentence, and it just kind of comes, you know, unbidden. You can't make it come, of course, and you look into it at odd times and unlikely times when you're supposed to be talking to somebody, and once you have that first sentence, you can run through the whole story, but it just sets the rules. It sets the way the rest of it's going to be for me. And I usually don't know exactly what's going to happen. I just kind of chase that first sentence down, let it become something else. And 2 or 3 pages later, I'm talking about something that happened to me, you know, 10 minutes ago or 10 years ago, and I didn't even mean to do that.
Did you write a lot when you were in high school?
In high school, no, it was just those letters to girlfriends. No, it was. I mean, I probably tried to write a few songs, you know, that pattern on Metallica lyrics or something, but never came to anything.
Well, did music inspire you in some of your writings?
The first story I ever turned into workshop was called A Wider Shade of Pale after Procol Harum song. And I remember I ended the story with, like, all the lyrics from that song. So, yeah, I guess music has influenced me.
And who were your favorite writers?
My favorite writers in high school?
Yeah.
In high school, I was hooked on Dean Koontz and Stephen King, and I still am. I still read them, of course.
And what is your favorite story written by Stephen King?
Favorite short story?
Yeah.
Probably one called The Jaunt. It's about interstellar travel, I guess, teleportation and the horrors associated with that.
Do you remember anything about your teachers? You know, because sometimes teachers, they always say, here's a good writer that you should read up more about. Was there anybody that was pushed into your arena?
Let me think. I tell you the truth, I went to class rarely, so I don't recall that. I did have some good teachers, but I can't recall any of them turning me on to, you know, the stuff you would read then, Red Badge of Courage or Catcher in the Rye or any of that stuff. And I didn't read any of that stuff till I was older.
Like, how old were you when you read Catcher in the Rye?
I read Catcher in the Rye, I believe, when I was about 22, I would guess.
So how do you classify your writing style?
Hopefully very intentional. Hopefully the prose comes off as intentional. It's not just a lens through which you focus onto the story, but hopefully something in and of itself. I try to pay a lot of attention to the words and how they fit together. As for the writing style, I don't know. It's hard for me to do that without, you know, being my own critic, I guess. It's occasionally thick, I guess. My first novel, Fast Red Road, the prose is very dense. I was consciously trying to, you know, emulate Thomas Pynchon, my hero at the time. And since then, I've been trying to unpack it some and make it more accessible. And I'm still, you know, doing that with every story I write, every novel I write.
Do you have to be a good reader to be a good writer?
Yeah, you do. You have to just read voraciously, read everything, not just stuff you like. But I always say that the trick to writing is, if I write a story, say I'll write 90% of it down, and the trick I have to do then as a writer is go back and read that story closely enough that the only good ending will present itself, you know, if that makes sense.
A little bit. Today we're talking with Stephen Graham Jones, and he's our Book of the Month author of Bleed Into Me, a series of short stories. Our number here is 1-800-996-2848 or 1-800-99-NATIVE if you have a question about writing, or maybe you like to share some of your favorite Native writers. Join our conversation today on Native America Calling. Again, our number is 1-800-996-2848. Well, one of my favorite stories in your book is called To Run Without Falling. And the reason I like this story is that it reminded me of my own youth, you know, partying with friends, and then somehow we ended up at a playground. And it's almost like we were saying goodbye to our childhood and also thinking about what our lives would be like as we got older. And we would, you know, kind of sit there and kind of talk about what we were going to do with our life. And to me, that was kind of the end of seeing my friends. And so this particular story, To Run Without Falling, what is the story behind this story?
It's much like Discovering America. It's probably 98% autobiographical, this one. It's just pretty much deducted what happened when I was younger. We'd go to the handicap park to, you know, hang out and have fun because it was very empty at night. And I guess, you know, looking back on that, it seems kind of weird. And you're right, it does feel like you don't think it's ever going to end, I guess. And those are the moments that I kind of am interested in.
Are the moments of not ending?
Yeah, that you feel you're not worried about the future or the past. You're just in the moment, you know, and you're just running with it. And it just feels like nobody's going to die and everything's going to work out good.
Well, I hope you can share some of the story with our listeners and kind of leave them hanging, because
all right.
This story really was one of my favorites, and I'd like you to start off. And where are you going to start off in the story?
I'll just start right up front, and I'll read for a couple pages, I reckon.
Okay, thank you.
All right, To Run Without Falling. We came up out of the streets like we'd slept there all day. The underbellies of delivery vans and police cruisers passing silent, huge, and black through our field of vision. Our joints pounded with it still. When we looked back, the sewers were exhaling steam, and it was rising. So we leaned into the night and ran, the slap of our feet filling the empty spaces around us until it all fell behind. And we were there again, the handicap park, its gentle yellow slide arching up nearly as high as the rocket. Josh rolled over the tall fence and stages, leaving part of the skin of his hand in the chain link, and Mike perched on top, pulling me up after him, and Tim was already there somehow, riding the metal duck into oblivion, his forehead kissing the gravel each time he leaned the spring forward, his mother's prayers the only thing keeping him alive. Another Friday night. We huddled in the nose of the rocket and passed the joint counterclockwise, and then Tim's bottle, and when Josh couldn't remember if the guide said never to take more than two or always to take at least two, we swallowed three yellow pills each. It was better living through chemicals. It was something at least. We were 14. In the silence after the rush, the gravity acceleration of the rocket pushing our faces into the steel floor as we shuddered towards escape velocity, I saw Josh seeing what he always said he saw. The men of the cocktail party, retiring to the porch after dinner to pass the needle, the ladies gossiping in the drawing room with their marijuana cigarettes and snifters of vodka. We were the gentlemen. Josh didn't know none of this would last. I saw what I saw even without the chemicals. A cat's eye view of a boy as he runs across the backyard, melting over fence after fence, whatever it takes to keep the kite aloft. Mike just stared through the bars of the rocket into the unforgiving irises of the great metal duck. He was the oldest of us. When Tim raised his head to track down Mike's line of sight, his glass eye stayed behind, gummed to the floor, some second grader's saliva reactivating long after his bedtime. We left the eye. Tim didn't care. It's all fun and games, Josh said in his adult voice, leading us down the switchback ramp, back to Earth, until Tim's eye falls out. He pushed Tim in jest, and Tim fell in earnest, took the rest of us with him, end over end. Later, dawn already a smell, we would become magnetic ghosts of ourselves on a security tape as we floated up one aisle of a convenience store and down another, touching the gauze and the disinfectant with sticky fingers, professionally gauging the distance from pharmaceuticals to the front door, the parking lot. Our passenger curled in the back seat. It would be too late for first aid, though, and we would be large and obvious in the convex mirror anyway, gravel still on the cuffs of our pants from hair, from the dipping action of the wheelchair seesaws we used as catapults, seesaws greased so quiet that we had to make up for it by screaming our presence, that we existed. Our voices didn't come back to us, but for one perfect moment, Mike ran after his, down the full length of the balance bar, his arms out like wings. The deserted park was his, then and maybe forever, but the bar was only 12 feet long, and there I was at the end of it. He slammed headfirst into my gut, the vertebra piling up in the back of his neck. We rolled through the gravel to the merry-go-round, and the three of them pushed me on it faster and faster until the green beans I'd swallowed whole at dinner became the reaching arms of a spiral galaxy, the delicate tips trailing behind. the rest whipping ponderously ahead, around and around. It turned me inside out. Tim's chin split like a plum when he dove to the ground to avoid the pale green plane of vomit. And when he lay sideways on the special swings, Josh could move the red cut like a little mouth. We made a puppet show. We crept to the nose of the rocket to check on Tim's eye, and it was still there, the gray strands of gum attached to its backside like a mass of optic nerves, and his chin said something to it none of us could understand.
And that was To Run Without Falling, a short little teaser for you. And we have Stephen Graham Jones. He is Blackfeet, and he is our feature guest as Book of the Month, Bleed Into Me, a series of short stories. And we have 10 copies of Bleed Into Me, a book of short stories by Stephen Graham Jones. If you call our number here at 1-800-996-2848, you can ask Stephen a question, or you can maybe share some things about your writing. Maybe you can get some tips from Stephen. He is a teacher at Texas Tech, and we'll be asking him to share more stories from Bleed Into Me. And that story, is there any character that comes to mind when you're reading that story? Is there somebody that you're thinking of?
Yeah, there is. There's a friend of mine. I guess I probably shouldn't say his name, but I remember he got hurt pretty bad one night, and I guess the story should be dedicated to him, probably.
Can you mention his first name?
Steve.
Steve?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, that was a really good story. I often wonder what happened to my childhood friends, because that particular night, you know, it was just like we didn't want it to end.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we even saw the sun come up, and I just really liked that story. And so I was really pleased to hear that that was one of your favorites as well. And I thought, you know, this is really great. I'm really looking forward to having you join us here on Native America Calling. Well, our phone lines are lighting up, and we are getting close to where we're going to be taking a break. But we do have time to just ask you, what writing philosophy did your teacher share with you that you didn't agree with, and why? You got about 15 seconds to answer that, and then we'll be taking a short break.
Oh, wow. Probably just to write on a schedule. I don't believe in writing on a schedule. I think you write whenever it hits you.
All right. Well, we'll be right back in just a few minutes. Again, our number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Our book of the month is Bleed Into Me. Our feature writer is Stephen Graham Jones.
You may not know the name of celiac, but chances are you know someone who is affected by this condition. They can't eat, or in some cases, even touch wheat or any of its byproducts like gluten. Join me, Patty Tholahungva, as we look at what life is like living with celiac on the next Native America Calling.
Recordings of Native music heard on NAC can be found by visiting our website, NativeAmericaCalling.com, and following the link to the public radio music source, where your purchase helps support this program. Native America Calling is supported in part by the Ford Foundation and the KBC Native Program Fund, a permanent endowment whose contributors include Cook Inlet Tribal Council.
Of the 12 million Americans diagnosed with diabetes, nearly half will develop some form of diabetic eye disease. This condition can affect anyone with diabetes, but it doesn't show symptoms until its advanced stages. If it's detected early, diabetic eye disease can be treated and your vision can be saved. People with diabetes should have an annual dilated eye exam. For a free brochure, call the National Eye Institute at 1-877-569-8474. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Welcome back to Native America Calling. I'm Camille LaCapa. I'd like to say hello to a few of our affiliate stations like KTDB in Pine Hill, New Mexico, KSFC in Spokane, Washington, and KMPO in Modesto, Stockton, California. And hello to our listeners joining us on the internet and on Sirius Satellite Radio. Today we're talking with Stephen Graham Jones. He's the author of Bleed Into Me, a book of short stories. He's a Blackfeet writer and assistant professor at Texas Tech University. What Native writers have inspired your work? If you're a writer, how do you classify your writing style? And do you think it's valid to classify a writer by ethnicity? And if you could write a book, what would it be about? Join our conversation. Our number is 1-800-996-2848 or 1-800-99-NATIVE. And joining me again is Stephen Graham Jones. Thanks again for joining us today.
It's wonderful being here.
Well, we were talking a little bit about some of your writing, and the other thing that I'd like to have you share with our listeners who are parents, what advice can you give to parents who are struggling with keeping their kids in school?
Oh, well, just keep them challenged, I guess. That's the reason I initially started or stopped going, because the classes were a joke. I wasn't learning anything. So just find a way to keep them challenged. Get them in a program that either is challenging or supplement the work at home, I would say.
Keep them busy.
Yeah. Well, not just busy. I mean, not just, you know, soccer and all that stuff, but challenge them intellectually, I would say.
That's good advice. Well, you know, Stephen, we have some calls, and we're going to go to some calls here. We're going to hear from Pinky in Warm Springs, Oregon, listening to us on KWSO. Hi, Pinky.
Hi. I'm listening from KWSO, and hello, Stephen.
Hello.
Hey, congratulations on your formal education and also on just living experience. I agree that that's as important as anything.
Well, thank you.
And I like your reading voice. And I'm an avid reader. I've never read Stephen King, but I think I'll try The Gaunt. And I want to know, in your writing, how do you keep from getting gloomy and pessimistic?
It's easy to do when you're writing what people want to call literary fiction, because they think that literary is equivalent to sad, you know, to making people cry. But how to avoid that? You don't really go into a story, or I don't go into a story thinking I want it to be a tearjerker. I want people to laugh. I just try to tell a story as honestly as I can, and generally that type of honesty will include or entail both humor and sadness, and just, you know, the whole spectrum of human feelings, I guess. So just don't focus too much on, you know, trying to be bit sad, I guess.
Did you have another question, Pinky? Okay, thanks for calling. And now we're going to have Fenifia from Arco, Idaho. She's listening to us on KISU. Hi,
hey,
Fenifia.
Hello, well, thank you. I want to say hello to Pinky and ask her to please say hello to Susan Lisi, who is Susan Smith and Lionel. Thanks. Stephen?
Yes?
I've been writing a thing. It's a book I call Growing Up in Occupied America.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have hoped to read you two short little bits and get your take on it and some feedback, maybe some helpful suggestions.
Right.
Would that
All
be
right.
okay?
Sure.
I would do this quickly. My cousin teased me. He said what some of the grandmothers had said and he'd overheard. You can cross a wolf with a hound dog, and some of the pups will look like wolves, but some will look like hound dogs. I bloodied his nose. My uncle, his dad, found me in the woods crying. He asked me why. I told him I hated being white. He told me that it was never about race. He told me that it was never about land. He said the fight was always about the right to live our lives freely and deliberately as hunter-gatherers and not raping or living from the mother with a plow. He said some of those hound dog-looking pups had hearts of wolves, and that was just a part of how it is when you're growing up in occupied America. And I was trying to think of this story, remembering some grandmother sitting in a teepee telling a story that she'd heard from one of her grandmothers. She was saying the missionaries gave us a Bible and told us it was the truth. We read about God, the Great Spirit, and how he created the world and all the animals. We read about Adam and Eve, and we read about Cain and Abel, and it was then that we knew it was the truth. Because Cain was a farmer, you see, and a city builder. The Bible said, and the father of all farmers and city builders. And his brother Abel followed the vast herds the Great Spirit made, and they fed Abel. And one day Abel took an animal that he killed, and he thanked God, and God was pleased. And Cain farmed, and God wasn't pleased, and God told Cain the problem was his brother would start to look to him instead of to God, and Cain would rule over his brother with this. So one day Cain got hold of his brother out in the field, and he killed him. Cain really thought that field was his. Now we see it's farmers and ranchers and city builders that have come to this land now to kill us here. So it's true, this Bible? Farmers killing out the hunter-gatherers the whole world over until all the world is dead. She went on to say, this Bible speaks the truth of them. It's a good enough religion for them. They should read their Bible and believe what it says about them. That Bible's true. God's not pleased. How could he be with those that kill their brothers and then go on to enslave all of nature? Death was all the greedy offered. That's what I wanted to share.
All right.
Thanks for calling in, Fenefia. Well, Stephen, we have a caller listening in on KUNM. And Dylan, welcome to Native America Calling. You have a question or comment?
Yes, Stephen, lead into me. I was inspired by your first story. It reminded me when I came over from Germany in 1969, and I was asked things like, do you use forks and knives? And I was repulsed at those questions, and they beat up my brother on a daily basis, and I had to help him. I hated Dallas. I started writing about the hate. They broke into my locker and stole all my writings. I stayed sad for a long time and started writing about my sadness in America. So when I heard you, your first short story, that's what it reminded me of.
Oh, good. I'm glad it got to you.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah.
Because I don't have the courage to call in. I've been listening to Native America for years since I've been here. But thank you.
Thank you.
I think you're touching a wide audience.
Thank you very much.
Well, that's really great. Thanks again, Dylan, for calling. She's our first-time caller here on Native America Calling. And I do want to mention to our listeners that today is our Book of the Month featuring Stephen Graham Jones. And we have copies of Bleed Into Me, a book of short stories. And when you call this number, 800-996-2848 or 1-800-99-NATIVE, you can join our conversation and receive a copy of Bleed Into Me. And Stephen...
Yes.
How does a writer find time for other things besides writing?
The way I do it is I just do everything I want to do, and then I write all night if I can. I just try to trade in sleep for writing all the time, sleep for stories. But I still go to a lot of movies and, you know, work on my truck and chase the dogs and stuff.
Well, I think sometimes, you know, with writers, they're just like artists. And sometimes family and friends understand that you need that space.
Yeah, they do.
So how do you get into that space mode, or how do they know not to bother you?
I just tell them, don't bother me right now.
Do not disturb sign, right?
Yeah. And also, I generally have when I'm writing, I turn the music on my computer up just painfully loud so people can't really come too close.
Well, that's really good. I know that there's a lot of writers that are probably taking a break right now listening to this conversation. We're going to go to a listener listening here, a first-time caller on KUNM, talking to Ann Poe. Welcome to Native America Calling.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello. I was listening to the radio, and it was just, they had said the titles of the names of your books so quickly that I didn't get a chance to, but I was really interested because this is, I'm half Apache and half Blackfoot, and I was interested to read from an author who's Blackfoot.
Yeah, so you want those titles again?
Yeah, and also just, I'm a full-time home mom, and I am interested in writing. I've written some poems, and my life, it sounded quite similar to yours. The only thing was is that I was adopted. And so the story that you had read over the radio reminded me a lot of my experiences growing up in a middle-class white family.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, when I would go to school, the kids would say, oh, can you do your rain dance? Or,
yeah.
You know, do you have a, what does this mean? Or you have a spirit animal.
Yeah.
And it was so frustrating. And I felt really separated from everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't till later in my life that I had some teachers in the Lakota Nation that had helped me to be comfortable with my Indianness. So if somebody approaches me now, it's more not so much of a how would you say that, a hassle and I wouldn't have a response. It's just that I am comfortable within my own skin now.
Yeah. The only bad thing, I remember when I was young and that was happening, for some reason when I was young, everybody would, anytime we needed a knife, everybody would say, Steven has a knife, he's the Indian, you know, I don't know why Indians are supposed to have knives. But I think I did kind of shape myself around that, because I finally got tired of saying, no, I didn't have a knife, so I just always had a knife on me, you know. It's terrible to shape yourself to fit the stereotype, whatever strange stereotype it is, you know.
Okay, well, thanks for calling, Ampo. And Stephen, can you give us your website address where people can find your books? What is the website?
It's stephengrahamjones.net.
stephengrahamjones.net. That's easy enough to remember. And how do you spell Graham?
G-R-A-H-A-M, just like the cracker.
Well, thanks again. And we also have a question here for you. What about books on tape? Would you take your stories to that level? And do you have somebody's voice in mind to read your story?
I don't have anybody's voice in mind, but I love books on tape. I listen to them all the time. But no, I don't have anybody in mind right now to read it. Just whoever wants to, I guess, whoever can enunciate clearer than I can, you know.
You have a soft voice.
Yeah, no, I never talk very loud. I always need microphones when I go to readings.
But that, I think that also draws an attention to your stories.
Oh, yeah? Yeah, I remember in the third grade, I got hit in the face with a steel bat, and it cut my tongue off, and they had to sew it back on. So for a real long time, I couldn't talk, and I was just real happy not talking.
Oh, yay.
Yeah, and I guess I'm kind of stuck with that.
Well, we're glad that you're able to talk with us today on Native America Calling. You also are suffering from bronchitis, and I just wanted to thank you again that you were able to join us today. Well, we're going to hear from a listener in Toronto, Canada. And again, if you would like to join our conversation and ask Stephen Graham Jones a question or maybe make a comment, our number here is 1-800-996-2848 or 1-800-99-NATIVE. We have copies of the book to give to our listeners, so please give us a call. 800-996-2848. And Kelly from Toronto, Canada, first-time caller.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, I have a question to ask you about something that I thought was the most interesting thing I heard you read.
Yeah.
And it was falling back into the spiral of the galaxy or something like that. And I just wondered if maybe you could elaborate a little tiny bit about what your experience was or what that means to you.
I remember, it's from Toronto Without Falling, when they're falling off the merry-go-round, I believe. And I was just trying to, I was going for the visual there of the, like when you see those, you know, doctored photographs of spiral galaxies that have those arms that they wisp out and trail away. That's the visual I wanted for that plane of vomit, I guess. But also, yeah, you're right, I did want that sense of falling into something bigger, you know, something infinite, I guess.
It's really nice that you brought a little bit of cosmology into the story. I think it made it a lot deeper.
Well, thank you very much.
Cool. Take care.
You too.
All right. Thanks, Kelly, for calling. You'll get a copy of Bleed Into Me, a book of short stories. And you can also join our conversation. Our number is 1-800-996-2848 or 1-800-99-NATIVE. And now we'll hear from Valerie, listening in on KUNM. Hi, Valerie.
Hello. Good morning. Hello, Stephen.
Hello.
I got a couple of questions about writing. Now,
yeah.
I've got a bachelor's in English, and I haven't really written anything since college. And how do you get started with your life experiences? We were taught that the best writing that you do comes from your own experience, but, you know, I just get overwhelmed. And where do you start? You just start writing, or you write down some of the ideas and you build from there, or you know, how do you get into that mode?
I guess my suggestion would be start out trying as hard as you can to lie, to make everything up, and as hard as you're trying to do something that's false, your own life, your own story, your own, you know, emotional landscape will control the shape of that story, of that scene, that whatever you're writing. And you can't help but write about yourself or your own experiences. That's all you know, of course. And but if you sit down to consciously try to write about that, then sometimes it turns into more of an essay, and you feel a sense of loyalty. You can't move people around and places around, so you need to have that freedom in fiction to lie, I think. Because, I mean, fiction has its own conventions, you know, and it, there's certain things you have to do, and certain developments, I guess.
Thanks for calling, Valerie. Stephen, do you ever get writer's block?
No. I just, the only writer's block I get is when the electricity's off or something, I guess. But no, Rick Demoranis, I think, says in his book on craft that writer's block is a fallacy. All that writer's block is a writer sitting down and trying to produce literature, you know. What you need to do is lower your standards a little bit and just say, I'm going to write 10,000 words instead of I'm going to write a story for the ages, you know.
Okay, well, thanks. We have Anne from Anchorage, Alaska. She's a first-time caller as well, listening to us on KNBA.
Hello.
Hi, Anne.
Hello.
Hi. I just had a question for Stephen, and thank you very much for being on the show. I find this conversation very interesting. I'm not a writer, but I'm interested in writing about my family history, and I just wanted to find out about or get some advice as to how to start, because I'm one of those who will sit down and have a blank sheet of paper in front of me and then I freak.
Yeah. I would probably be, I mean, an exercise I would suggest is if you're going to write about, you know, your great uncle, you know, he fixed this one truck 30 years ago on the side of the road, then don't write the story, you know, Uncle Mickey broke down. Instead, put yourself in Mickey's head, you know, and use an I pronoun, there I was doing this, and kind of just create the whole time around that 50 years ago or whatever, you know. Just always remember that the reader is not in the same place as the story is taking place, so you have to create that world for the reader.
Great. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you for calling.
Well, this is interesting. I know that we were talking also just before this program. You were talking about how you got into trouble, and it was mostly because you were trying to recapture what your uncles did in their youth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I grew up with my uncles a whole lot. They were still kids in the house I was growing up in, or in one of the houses I was growing up in, and they were always telling stories about, you know, what they'd done on Friday night, Saturday night, or Tuesday night, and just all the wild stuff going on, and they would try to edit them down, but didn't do a very good job of it, and I picked up on that, and it, I don't know, just felt like that's the way to be, you know. I mean, I'm not, of course, not blaming them or anything like that, but there's nothing to blame for. I've had a great time, but you kind of do pattern yourself after the stories you hear, I think.
Well, today we're talking with Stephen Graham Jones. He's the author of Bleed Into Me, a book of short stories, and we have a couple of books left. So if you'd like to get a copy of this book, give us a call and join our conversation. Our number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Let's go to Brenda, listening to us on KUNM in El Prado, New Mexico.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi, Stephen. I really loved that first story that you read. It was just really very, very moving. I had a question about the title of the book and where that came from. But also, I just wanted to say that I just really loved your writing, and I'm really excited about reading the book.
Well, thank you very much. The title for the collection comes from the title story, Bleed Into Me, which is about a father holding his son who's really injured in his lap and telling him to give him all his blood, he'll save it, you know.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, thanks, and I wish you the best of luck. I think you're, you know, I really look forward to reading more material by you.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
Stephen, have you shared any of your stories with your uncles that they're kind of in your writing, but they don't know that they're in your writing?
No, I haven't. They may have my books, but I don't ask them about it, of course. It's with family, it's always kind of awkward to ask if they've read your stuff, you know, because maybe they just want to put it on the shelf.
How would you feel about that?
Oh, that's great, as long as they buy it, I guess. But no, to tell you the truth, I'm probably more comfortable with my family not reading my stuff. I've heard it said that a writer doesn't come into his or her own until, you know, his 40s or 50s, which is, you know, maybe the age at which his parents died, and he can start telling the stories which are real to him without worrying about his parents reading them, of course. But I guess another way around that, to keep your parents alive, is just maybe have them not read your books, you know?
Well, I think that is hard when you have a family that you ask critique from. You know, I think that's always difficult. Well, today we're talking to Stephen Graham Jones. He's Blackfeet, and he is an associate professor at Texas Tech, and he is our guest today as Book of the Month. And you can get a copy of this book, Bleed Into Me, A Book of Short Stories, by calling us here at 800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. What made you decide to obtain a higher education? It seems like you would have just kind of just gave up on the whole school system after high school.
Oh, yeah, I did. I had no plans at all to go to college. I was just going to hang out with my friends and keep doing what we've been doing. But then my mother surprised me. Somehow she came up with the money to get me a first year of school. So I came up to Texas Tech and took a few classes and lucked into some good classes, some philosophy classes. And I was hooked because they were talking about vital stuff in an intelligent way. And I was actually learning, which is what I've always wanted and loved, is just to learn. And so I was hooked after that. I just paid my own way as much as I could. And still paying off loans, of course. But no, I'd still be in the classroom if I could somehow. I mean, I am in the classroom. I'm just in front of the classroom. But I love taking classes and learning.
Well, I think you're an inspiration to others who may have struggled through school. And I know that there are stories where people have, you know, struggled through school, but yet they're determined to prove everyone else wrong, that they're going to further their education, get a college degree. So I think this is great that we have you on today's program. We're going to hear from Carol, a first-time caller listening in on the Internet in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Welcome to Native America Calling, Carol.
Hi, thank you. Good morning. I have a question for you, Stephen, about, I wondered if you could talk a little bit about publishing a book for a first-time book writer.
Oh, yeah. I guess the odds against you are scary, you know, of course, intimidating even. But are you asking how to do it or just my own experiences?
Experiences as well.
Oh, my experience, I was quite lucky to get my first novel published. My first novel, Fast Red Road, was my dissertation at Florida State University, and luckily I just almost immediately found the press, which dealt in that kind of experimental fiction, and I was just extremely lucky. And then, of course, once you've got one novel published, then other publishers are willing to, you know, look more favorably on you. As for the right way to do it, I would say the right way to do it is to first complete the novel, have it perfect, then solicit agent or query agents and get yourself an agent, which is itself, you know, a huge task. And then that agent will send it out to publishers for you. If you send it to the publisher yourself, a good chance it's just going to disappear, or you'll never hear about it again. So, yeah, you nearly have to go through an agent. And the trick is finding an agent who believes in you, who just really buys your writing and is willing to sell you.
Well, thanks again, Carol, for calling in today. And now we're going to Kathy from White River, Arizona, first-time caller as well, listening to us on KNNB. Hi, Kathy.
Hello. I'd like to congratulate Mr. Graham on his book, and I look forward to reading it. So far, it sounds interesting.
Well, thank you very much.
All right, congratulations.
Thank you.
Okay, bye.
Well, that's really nice, being congratulated.
Yeah.
How does that make you feel?
Oh, good. I mean, it's It's always wonderful when a book comes out, you feel invulnerable for a day or two, you know, and then the reviews come out, you know.
But yet, you know what I think is interesting is that you shared with me that you didn't even attend your graduation, or I think they had a special ceremony for you and you didn't even...
Yeah, at Florida State, I think I was the first tribal member to graduate in 31 years with a graduate degree. And, of course, I didn't go to the graduation ceremony. I never was really interested in walking the stage, but I heard afterwards that it was kind of an awkward moment where they had something planned. You know, they had some stuff going on for me being the first in 31 years. But, oh, well.
Would you do it all over again? Would you do the same, or would you participate?
Oh, I might participate, I guess. I was always a little bit uncomfortable at Florida State because of the mascot, you know. That always kind of bugged me. I never went to any of the sporting events or anything.
Did you ever write about the mascot issue in any of your stories?
In All the Beautiful Sinners, I may touch on that kind of stuff a little bit. One of the main characters, Amos Pease, goes to a garage called Honest Engines, you know, spelled I-N-J-U-N-S, which is really a mechanic place, a garage down in Houston. I've seen it and took pictures of it. It's a crazy, crazy thing. But Amos Pease, being a pretty much killer, kills the garage owner. So that's kind of me getting back at all those people for doing that, you know.
Well, we're getting close to the end of our program here, Stephen, and I really want to thank you for joining us today on Native America Calling, being our book of the month, Bleed Into Me, a book of short stories. Can you give out your website address, and also for our listeners who are not yet connected to the Internet, how can they find your publications?
First, the website is stephengrahamjones.net. And as for people who aren't online, the way to get it is to go down to your local bookstore and just order it, ask them to put it on the shelf, you know, Borders, Barnes & Noble, or just wherever. If you don't find it, ask for it, and they'll get it for you.
Well, we'd like to thank the University of Nebraska for donating books for today's show. And again, we'd like to thank you for joining our program today. Do you have any last comments that you would like to leave with today?
I just hope that some of the stories in Bleed reach people. That's what I always hope.
All right. Well, thank you again for joining us on Native America Calling. And Stephen Graham Jones, again, his website is stephengrahamjones.net if you'd like to find out more information about Bleed Into Me, a book of short stories. And also want to thank our staff here at Native America Calling. Special thanks to our associate producer, Tara Gatewood, engineer Nola Daves Moses, for National Native News, Antonia Gonzalez, executive producer Susan Brain, and also Patty Telahungva. And I'm Camille LaCapa. Thanks for joining us, and don't forget to stay tuned for Native America Calling tomorrow at the same time, and also you can find out more information at nativeamericacalling.com.